Welcome to the LDA Podcast, a series dedicated to improving the lives and education of all learners. In this episode, we talk with Patricia Buckley, an educator with over 40 years of experience in special education, who is the winner of the 2020 Sam Kirk Educator of the Year Award. Patricia provides us with some education advice that she's gained throughout the years.
Hello, everyone. I'm here with Patricia Buckley, the 2020 Sam Kirk Educator of the Year Award winner. This Sam Kirk Award is given to an educator who has made an outstanding contribution to the education of persons with learning disabilities. Patricia has been a full-time special educator since 1977. She spent the first 28 years of her career teaching in Massachusetts, utilizing Wilson, Orton-Gillingham, Linda Mubell, and Project Read training. Since 2003, Patricia has been teaching at the Richland Elementary School in Crest Hill, Illinois. She is an active member of LDA Illinois. Thank you for joining us, Patricia.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Great. So what led you to pursue a career in education to begin with?
I think the first time I vividly remember wanting to become a teacher was when I was seven. My dad was the youngest of six children, and all of my cousins were substantially older than I was. There was a big gap difference. And several of them were teachers. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of an inspiration there, what they did and how passionate they were. And I just liked, when I was playing in the kids with neighborhoods, to play school, and I always wanted to be the teacher. So I think it started from seven and being really early on, and then it kind of moved into, I had lots of opportunities to babysit in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I was a passionate reader, so moms always loved me coming over and read to their children and things like that. So it started really early on. Initially, I wanted to be history social studies teacher, because mm-hmm. that's what my cousin did, and then it moved to various types of experiences. In fact, I had the opportunity my senior year in high school, instead of going to school one day a week, I was paired up through a partnership with Boston Public Schools to go to Emerson College, mm-hmm. Emerson University now, and work in their clinic for 2.5-year-old children that had just been determined to have hearing loss, and got to work in the clinic with all of the graduate students who were pursuing speech and language therapy, audiology, and I got to go and learn from all of these wonderful people, and had the opportunity to teach concepts to kids. So I would have my little group of kids, and I would teach up, down, mm-hmm. In, out, on, off. And I guess my most valuable teaching lesson I have ever learned was in that experience. One of the things at Emerson was they did not teach lip reading. Their philosophy was was to teach lip reading and not to do sign, just because they felt that that was going to be more universal for the kids to be able to navigate the real world. And so the lesson that we learned was that we were never able to say the word no in our instructional practice, because the parents were taught, because they were on the other side of a one-way mirror observing the classroom instruction and doing parent-teacher work, was that when the children heard the word no and said at a certain level, they were to freeze because they were in some perilous situation. They were going to go touch a hot stove, or they were at the top of a staircase, and mm-hmm. or run across the street. So as we sat there in the little group, and you say, oh, no, that's not it, honey. It was like, no. At the end of each session, all of the professors and all of the practitioners, so if we sat around at a table and we would talk about each of the students, but then they would say, Patricia, you said the word no 6 times. Mm-hmm. And they would have to keep, you know, they kept track of what you did. And it really then taught me what no is, but that how to reframe your questions or your feedback mm-hmm. to students. Yeah. So, and continues to be my most powerful lesson that I've ever learned in education yeah. from that opportunity as a high school senior.
That's awesome. I never even heard of that. And then just the because it makes sense now. Like mm-hmm. saying no is only used in safety situations right. for these students. And then how often do I even tell my own child no? Or maybe I should be reframing that and mm-hmm. really structuring mm-hmm. what can you do so that they know exactly what to do rather than what not to do.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's a great lesson, and you got to learn it so early.
Well, no, it was... And it kind of led to this sort of trajectory in terms of where I went in terms of my teaching. Initially, I had applied to Emerson, mm-hmm. And you could probably tell from the accent, I can have a very strong Bostonian accent because I was born and bred there. Mm-hmm. And they told me, yes, if you come, you will have to take speech and language classes because we have to get rid of that accent.
I'm going to tell you that I don't notice it, but I'm from Massachusetts.
Oh, good. So we're from the same neighborhood. Yeah. We're good. But because of family situations, and my dad was taking a job in the western part of the state, I was applying to Boston schools, and at that time, you couldn't apply for housing if you lived in Boston proper, because it was mm-hmm. such a low availability of housing that they were using it for out-of-state students. So I ended up going to Bridgewater State College, but went into special education and was a dual certified in both elementary and special education. So,
and you've made a career of it.
Yes, I have. At that time that I graduated, it was Proposition 2.5 in Boston, so there was no teaching jobs available. You had to look outside of the state, and had the opportunity. I was the state secretary for the Student Council of Exceptional Children and arranged for a group of us to go to Atlanta for the National CEC Conference, and they had a job fair, and had actually then got a position to go teach on an Indian reservation 150 miles north of Flagstaff, mm-hmm. Which is, well, this will be a great opportunity. But in the interim, I had graduated, and I was like, what am I going to do for the summer? And I had already been in contact with a headhunter for a teacher, and an opportunity arose to work at a summer school program at Eagle Hill in Hardwick, Massachusetts, and paid for them to find me the job. But I said, oh, this would be a great opportunity for me to go and have my own classroom and kind of learn and practice my craft. And I went to that summer school program, and then I didn't leave for 20 years later. So, but I found a home there and great, amazing learning opportunities in terms of being able to work with children with specific learning disabilities, but had the benefit of also doing lots of work with them because they live there residentially and
it's a full wraparound services kind of
And helping them with homework and what that looked like for school and making good choices and so I've been blessed by the experiences that I've had early on in my career that has, I think part of it has led me to continue to do what I do. One of the frustrations for me being at Eagle Hill was to see the number of children come. There were high school students that couldn't read or struggled with reading, and they had all of these other amazing attributes and talents, but that was the thing that was holding them back.
Yeah.
So I had this opportunity to look at a position in grades 1 through 3 to work with kids in reading. So I left there, and I continue to serve that population of younger kids to hopefully make a difference, that they don't have to wait
till
high school to figure out that they need help and support so that they can navigate their world and to be able to share their talents and their gifts that they have.
So often in education, we are asked to do a lot. We're asked to be maybe a therapist, a cheerleader, the teacher, as well as maybe the parent sometimes. And what I see a lot is kind of a burnout in teachers, or you often hear about teacher burnout. So what has kept you going for 40 plus years, and what has it been that has you have avoided the burnout?
I will say my burnout was probably very early on in my career, because then you just really kind of question yourself. Am I being effective? Am I making a difference? Mm-hmm. You know, and I had this incredible special ed director, education director at Eagle Hill, Norma Shields, and she'd go, what flag is up? Is it the S day or the L day? Is it the staying flag or the leaving flag? Because you just, as particularly early on, you kind of question, are you making a difference? You know, do you have the skills and the talents? And she gave me a valuable lesson, because it was like, I always try to, we get to pick the kinds of classes, you know, I want to work with kids that, you know, really, you know, need to work on handwriting, and they need to work on oral language, and they need to work on reading, and you'd always put down what you don't want to teach, and I always put down writing, like, I don't want to teach writing, and every time we did new classes, she would give me a writing class. It's like, what are you doing to me? But again, it was a valuable lesson, was I was determined that I was going to make writing successful and pleasurable for me to teach and look at growth for students, but for them to feel like that they could be successful writers and things like that. And it's kind of one of my greatest joys when I get to work with students that come to me for writing and let them see themselves as writers and communicators and things. But that was real. It was like, okay, I'm going to keep working at this. And kind of one of my personal philosophies has always been, I always go and take on a new challenge every year to learn something new, whether it be, you know, personal or professional, and do things that are out of my comfort zone. In that it helps me then to appreciate what struggles or challenges the students that I have to face when I'm asking them to do things. You know, I'm a reader, so I can read. Yeah. But I don't always think about what I do to be a reader when I sit down and enjoy a book to read. Yeah. But for them, it isn't always enjoyable. So by taking on that personal challenge to learn something new has kept me mindful of what my students have to do and how I have to work with them to know that it's okay to make mistakes, what you do to pick yourself up to persevere, looking at a new strategy or a new skill to work through something. So, and the other thing is those aha moments. When you have a kid sit in front of you and say, oh my goodness, I get it. This makes sense to me. It is the most warm feeling that you can have. And so I look for those every day.
Sounds like
small or big.
Sounds like you have an incredible growth mindset for both yourself and the students that you work with.
And I think in terms of me professionally, I have any opportunity I can get to avail myself to professional development at my cost or school cost. I always take advantage of it. The other thing I've done is I really look at finding my community. You know, in a school system, you know, the reality is people are all at different places and where they are. And I find my marigolds, and I find these group of people who have similar mindsets that to me, in terms of being open and learning and growing and creating that community of support, that helps to keep that positive mindset and to like to continue to do what we do and to be able to have somebody that I can go, oh my God, you wouldn't believe what my student did today. And that same person is going to have that same joy and thrill for me. Mm-hmm. So I think that that is really important. I think also just involvement in different groups and organizations like the Learning Disabilities Association and whatever your, you know, if it's ASHER, American Speech and Language, or Council for Exceptional Children, or any organizations that also provide you with that other community. Sometimes it's very easy to feel like you're all alone on this ship, and to be able to have resources and places to go that
support you and embrace you.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
You know, and that it's kind of like the wonderful thing of, you know, over these last couple of days and going to all of the workshops, and you go to some and it's like, well, I knew that. But isn't that great confirmation? It's like, yes, what you're doing is still really relevant. It's still practical. But also to see some of the struggles that, you know, that other places in the country are dealing with. And it's like, yes, you know, how are we dealing with anxiety in children and, you know, dealing with EL students and how that has increased and how best to serve that population of students and, you know, how to work with and preparing students for, like, transitions. And so there's all kinds of things that you gain from those kinds of experiences from a multitude of people with all kinds of experiences and stuff. So I guess I kind of like a sponge. I just enjoy learning.
And that's great. That's what we want to see in our teachers, mm-hmm. the love of learning, right. And the self-reflection that, right. goes with learning and the continuous learning process, right. that's ongoing.
And that makes a difference because I'll go back to school on Friday. It's like, you know, where have you been, Miss Buckley? And I'll finally be able to tell them where I've been. But it's like, guess what? This is what we're going to try because this is something that I learned. And mm-hmm. we're going to see how it goes, mm-hmm. and get feedback from them. They're kind of a great resource for you.
Yeah, as it's immediate whether... feedback, right?
Exactly. So, but yeah.
So you've been in education for over 40 plus years. What has been the biggest changes you've seen?
For me, I think the saddest part of just looking at my students, because kids are wonderful. They are joyful. It's the unfortunate adult circumstances that many of them have to contend and deal with on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if you're 5 or you're 6 or you're 7 or you're 17, that they have to contend with issues from home life, mm-hmm. that you really need to know your kids and what they come to school with. And it's not that they don't want to try hard or, but I think a lot of them have a lot more stuff, mm-hmm.
in their
worried about.
Life.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, where am I sleeping tonight? You know, do I have a coat? Have I had breakfast? Mm-hmm. I've seen just more of an impact on that in terms of my students. Mm-hmm. But for most of them, you know, they want to learn. They want to feel accepted. They want to do well. Mm-hmm.
And for some, school is that safe place for them.
Is their only safe place. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what my school room is like. It's a place to, you know, to be safe and to build that for students, that they know that when they come there, it's a positive place to be, that they're going to be supported and they're going to be cared for, and it's okay to make mistakes. Because mm-hmm. best... mistakes are the best teachers. Mm-hmm. That's why I have erasers all over my room. Because I make them all the time. I make them all the time. But in terms of what, you know, of what I have to deal with in terms of my students. You know, there's been many great things just in terms of, you know, what we're doing in research and practice in terms of reading and really looking at reading and how best to serve students, the fact that, you know, we're, you know, I started, as I said, in the 70s, and, you know, it was PL 94, 142, and, mm-hmm. You know, being like off in a little classroom, you know, in the basement and having kids have more opportunity to be involved in school-wide community and not being held back because they can't read, that they can partake in many experiences like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. So being in that inclusion general education classroom instead of that basement mm-hmm. dwelling classroom, right. where nobody sees them is a big change to the IDEA, right. and the reauthorizations that have happened over the years as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are some great things that I've seen.
So you have a wealth of knowledge in terms of the teaching profession. What mm-hmm. advice do you have for new teachers or educators that have been around and are kind of feeling burnout?
I think, and I've had many I've been blessed to have had the opportunity to mentor student teachers, to mentor colleagues. I've had colleagues mentor me, and I think for me, the two lessons that I always share with them, one I've already shared with you about continuing to be a student because it helps to keep you in perspective of what your children have to do every day. But I think the most important is reflection. Mm-hmm. And every day, driving home from school, I am, replaying, my day and looking at, what worked, what I would tweak, what didn't work, how did I make this child feel? Did I deliver, the instruction in the right way? Did I feel like I rushed them? But just always reflecting on my practice and is what am I going to do the next day to make it be different? So I think reflecting on your practice and what you do is an important lesson that I would share with them.
Yeah. Great advice. I think that really promotes that whole continuous learning process mm-hmm. and the cycle mm-hmm. that we
exactly.
go through as teachers. And if we stay in that cycle, it's hard to get burnt out because we're always looking to improve. And then,
It's kind of like looking for that next challenge. What is it going to be and stuff? And so was always looking for that next challenge.
Yeah. So thank you, Patricia, for all you have to share, and congratulations on the Sam Kirk Award. We obviously chose a very deserving recipient.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to let me talk to you this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the LDA Podcast. Our theme music is Little Idea by Scott Holmes, and this series was made possible by the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America. Next week, we sit down with Dr. Aline Dion and Laura Polvinen to discuss some of the social and emotional challenges for students with language-based learning disabilities. For more resources from LDA, visit ldaamerica.org.